Yo, yo, what's up? Harry Santos here, and we just rebranded our pod. I've been an advocate of crypto for about a decade now, so join me and some friends I've met along the way as we discuss and learn more about the space. Fasten your seatbelts, it's time to go block to the future. Welcome back, guys, to Block to the Future. We have another esteemed guest, you know, another OG in the crypto space. You might know him as the COO of YGG, but what you might not know is he was actually also an early employee in Coins PH. He helped grow that here. He became a director of Binance in Southeast Asia, expanding and growing Binance in the region. And he has a lot of other projects that we will also be talking about in this episode. So I'd like to welcome Colin Galtra. Colin, welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Harry.
All right, perfect. So I think what our audience would love to know, and even I would love to know, is what your crypto story is. You've worked for a lot of great companies, a lot of big people, and now you're with YGG. But what is your story? How did you get into crypto, and what was that like?
Yeah, totally. So thanks for having me. Super excited to be here and to obviously, you know, I care deeply about kind of crypto in the Philippines, and so it's great to see more media and more content focused on our space. You know, so I'm Filipino American. My mother's family is originally from the Philippines, but I grew up in California. And so early in my career, I was in finance and tech in Silicon Valley. But when I was in finance, this thing happens where you're not allowed to trade stocks because you have all this kind of privileged sort of non-public information. And so there's a, you know, I was aware of compliance internally before I was, you know, even in the crypto or fintech space. And so, you know, I think when I was in investment banking, you know, our group was basically thinking like, okay, well, we can't trade stocks. Like what should we do with our bonus money and that sort of thing. And so actually my group started actually trading Bitcoin. So there was a few of us that were interested in Bitcoin. This was 2013, about 10 years ago. And, you know, we all got really into it. 2013 was an awesome kind of volatile year. It was maybe like a 17 or like a 21, right? There's kind of these 4-year cycles. So we watched it go up. It was super exciting. And then it crashed to the ground. And everyone else was like, okay, sunk cost fallacy. I'm getting out. This is stupid. It's so volatile. And I was like, wait a sec, this is actually pretty cool. And so I think from there, you know, I learned about it beyond just kind of basic pump literature. Obviously, I was working in finance for the tech sector, so it was kind of, you know, relevant to the space already. But from there, you know, I think I was already very interested in Austrian economics. You know, the theories about gold and competing currencies, and a lot of the same kind of economic theory that Satoshi likely read. So I was kind of that ilk already, and from there, you know, I started going to the meetups in San Francisco. So I went to, you know, there was the Bitcoin meetup, there was the Bitcoin developers meetup, there was kind of this early ecosystem. It wasn't even really the blockchain scene or the crypto scene anymore. It was really all just the Bitcoin meetups. But, you know, obviously there were people working on other projects as well. And, you know, I was doing that for a couple of years, just going to the meetups, spending kind of all my time outside of work, you know, focused on this new emerging scene. It was the scene at the time was very wild. It was like a lot of libertarians and anarchists. And there was a guy, I met a guy once that was like a prepper. So he's like, yeah. he basically was there, and I said, what's your name? He says, I can't tell you my name. You know, he's like, he's a very paranoid guy, and literally in a trench coat. And, you know, it was a lot of very strange frontier characters back then. And so, you know, I think it got to a point where it was clear that the blockchain space, right, the crypto space was going to be, you know, a real thing, and that I was actually quite early, you know, for that scene. And so, you know, I quit my corporate job at end of 2015, and by 2016, I was actively looking for, you know, a place to really like kind of carve my name in the crypto space. In the U.S. back then, it was this era of that maybe people called blockchain, not Bitcoin, and so it was like everyone was saying, you know, yeah. Sure, it'd be nice to have a separate financial system, but you know what we really need is health records, or, you know. And so it was kind of this naive approach to it, where it was like, you know, the Accenture types of the world saying, right, hey, everyone needs this really slow database. And, you know, everyone was like, why do we need this thing? And it was a very naive approach. You know, these spaces are always like this a bit. But yeah, it was a semi-naive approach to the whole thing. And so I was having a hard time kind of writing my story in the Philippines for the US, because I didn't think that there were people building things that I was as excited about. But in a strange way, you know, obviously, you know, I think for the holidays in 2015 and end of 2015, we came home to the Philippines, saw our extended family for New Year's. And you know, when I was looking for opportunities in 2016, I had a friend, still have the friend, who was an investor in this early stage startup in the Philippines. And he said, hey, I know you're struggling to find the thing that you're excited about in the US and you want to do crypto and blockchain. Why don't you go to the Philippines? There's this guy, Ron Hose and Renard Peterson. They're building this really exciting financial, you know, fintech platform that leverages crypto. It's called coins.ph. They're going to raise some more funds soon. They've got, you know, a very exciting team, great mix of kind of international people as well as people from the Philippines. You know, there's real traction there and there's real use cases. You know, you can use crypto for remittances, for a handful of other things. And so, I mean, what was maybe the biggest jump for me at the time, I was like, yeah, I'll move to the Philippines. That sounds awesome. And, you know, joined CoinsPH, worked in a mix of product for a bit and also helped kind of with people and hiring and ultimately kind of was the GM of the crypto business at Coins. Was there for 3 years. We scaled the business something like 20x. So, you know, by the time I left, you know, we had over 7 million users. We were acquired by Gojek, which is kind of a regional big tech company from Indonesia. And then we scaled CoinsPH. It was really exciting. You know, some of the stuff I did there was like, there were all these hard forks of Bitcoin. So we had to deal with Bitcoin Cash and then Bitcoin SV.
Right.
About a lot of Ethereum updates. We were the ones that launched the non-Bitcoin coins in the Philippines. So like a lot of times people got their first ETH or Bitcoin Cash or XRP through CoinsPH. And then eventually I left, took a little bit of a break, and then I joined Binance. You know, Binance was really exciting. I was focused on ultimately 11 markets throughout Asia Pacific. And then, you know, in a similar thing, which is how I started in Bitcoin, I started in Bitcoin because I couldn't trade stocks because I was in a finance company. So at Binance, I couldn't trade tokens because I was at the exchange. And so I started collecting NFTs. And so on the side at Binance, I got very into SuperRare. I, you know, was meeting with a lot of the local people like Gabby Dizon, who ultimately founded Yield Guild, and was kind of very involved in the NFT and then play to earn communities, you know, while I was at Binance. Ultimately, I left Binance because Gabby had an opportunity available at YGG to be the COO. And so I hopped on that and you know, have been helping it to scale. And so, yeah, it's just kind of been like a decade in the crypto space and happy to be here.
Man, what an intense history, man. You got to work for Ron Hose. He was actually previously in this podcast as well. He's like my idol, man.
Yeah.
And you also worked for CZ, another one of, you know, I think everyone's idols in the crypto space.
Yeah.
I'm very curious, like, what is that like, growing CoinsPH here in the Philippines and then in another stage of growth, Binance expansion in Southeast Asia? What's that like? What are the challenges and what are the things that you learned?
Yeah, totally. So I'd say one lesson, you know, maybe between the two, right, is I always think of like crypto businesses a little bit like sailboats, right? So you can be a very good sailor, right? But if you don't have good wind, right? So there is an extent to which the crypto market is a very cyclical business. You'll learn that if you're in the market, you know, if you're in the crypto space for even just a few years, right? So there's really big up years and really big down years, right? And so I kind of think of these kinds of crypto businesses as sailboats, right? So, you know, it's like as you can be a great sailor, but if the wind, if you're against the wind, you're not going to be as fast, right? And in fact, you might not be able to sail at all, right? So there's that. And so the goal of a crypto business like this is you actually want to not just have a sailboat, you want to learn how to build a motor, right? Or you want to learn how to build, you know, rowing capacity and then maybe a motor, right? And so, you know, I think something Binance did really well was it has spot trading the same way as CoinsPH does, but then actually it's got things that people trade when there's a down market, right? When there's it's a down market, still they're still trading other types of crypto products, right? They're trading, you know, futures and derivatives, right? They're trading NFTs, right? In the same vein, CoinsPH, you know, when the crypto market was not, you know, was not strong for CoinsPH, this would have been like 2018, 2019. CoinsPH is also a payments company, right? And so Ron and CZ both kind of have that in common, which is it's hard to rely on just the market trading by itself. It you know, you have some business that's also very relevant to it, that's kind of connected to it, right? And then in terms of scaling, you know, it's funny to have compare the two of them, because kind of CoinsPH was a much earlier stage of the crypto market. So the stuff we had to do was a lot around telling people what Bitcoin is, right? It was a lot to do with, you know, figuring out how to make, you know, how to bring Ethereum wallets to CoinsPH, right? It was really like early infrastructure. And you know, I think even back then, like for fintech, it wasn't always convenient to have an integration with all the banks, right? There wasn't payment rails in the same way. It wasn't, you know, it was there was just a lot more complexity, not just on the crypto side, but also on the fintech side. And then by the time we had Binance, in some ways Binance got to exist kind of abroad for many people, right? So it's like some people were already aware of Binance, so it already had kind of the brand recognition. And then, you know, by the time some of the people in the Philippines were using Binance, it was, you know, people using it because that's where you could trade SLP, right? So it was they were already using crypto for other things and had to come to Binance to trade into other currencies, right? And so, yeah, I mean, Binance was obviously very exciting. You know, the one of the things that was exciting about Binance was just being able to do things at scale, right? So you have a try to run a trading competition or some sort of promotion and for CoinsPH, and it was early days, you'd get some decent traction. You try to run a promotion for Binance, and suddenly people across the world would see it, would participate in it. You know, even something not successful would have hundreds or even thousands of participants, which is really exciting. You really get to, you're operating in crypto at kind of the biggest scale. And it's definitely an exciting business. It's been kind of the thing I've become most specialized in a way.
I love that analogy, the sailboat analogy. Most builders would probably think of what they're doing as rocket ships, but you're right. Yeah. We should think about it as sailboats. That's an amazing thing I learned just now. I just saw in the news recently that you guys actually acquired an NFT project, right?
Yeah.
Oniforce. And now, before we get into that, before we dive into what it is and your plans for it, you know, you mentioned that you've always been in the tech startup world. In that world, we know that when you acquire a company, you get to get assets, actual physical assets. You get to own the brand, right? And even get to acquihire people. What does it mean to acquire an NFT project, and how does that work?
Yeah, so, you know, I got into NFTs in 2020 because I was at Binance and I couldn't trade, you know, various altcoins anymore, right? It was frowned upon. And so while I was doing NFTs, you know, I got very interested into sort of crypto art. There was an early super rare scene. And then there was actually this period where crypto punks had been around for a long time. Super rare and rareable and you know, art was pretty popular. And then there was this early period in maybe, let's say, and maybe the other platform that was popular back then was Nifty Gateway. And then there's a period in early 2021 where people were starting to do these profile pic collections. So there was Hash Masks, obviously Bored Apes has become very, very famous, Bored Ape Yacht Club. And there was a lot of these early collections that people that had made money from the crypto art scene or from prior eras of crypto became very enamored with. And the difference though is those, you know, it was a mixed bag, right? The people that founded Bored Ape Yacht Club, they were people that kind of had a background in business and were ready to scale a company, right? Right. Whereas there were some people that built early collections that were more artistically inclined or maybe hadn't built a startup before, but they built these great characters, this great set of IP that people really, you know, became in love with and you know, put money into and these sorts of things, right? So one of these was a project called the Oniforce. Right. So Oniforce was, you know, a series of 7,777 anime-style IPs. It was the first one to face to the side. And I think for many people, that was there were people that maybe hadn't been excited yet about CryptoPunks or Bored Ape Yacht Club or some of the other major PFPs, but they saw Owning Force and they said, wow, okay, I actually really like the art for this, right? And so there was this long history of people that, you know, I think, you know, not long after launch, you know, it went up to like 7 ETH floor. You know, it was really like an early blue chip in the space. You know, I think that founding team, though, you know, they had some attempts to do stuff with the IP, but couldn't quite get it off the ground. And I think within a year and a half or 2 years later, you know, the project had declined very significantly in price. You know, many people had got, you know, many people that were very, very excited about it early on ultimately left that community. You know, I think it was a little bit, you know, it was a little bit down on its luck, right? But, you know, I think in the NFT space, provenance is a value, right? The longer something has a history and that history is entirely on chain, you know, that is sometimes a driver of value. And so what I saw in that community was, okay, this is very interesting, you know, IP, right? So it's like, these are characters that people like, people do fan art, people do, it's anime style, people want to do little, you know, graphic novels, people want to do, you know, they really like their character, they identify with it, and they want to build this universe, this Oniforce universe, right? So it's very, very valuable IP. It's a community that of people that, you know, can afford a character that's a couple thousand dollars at a time, you know, and then it's got this history in Web3, this legacy in Web3 that I think is exciting. And so I was meeting with kind of the project lead. We had met with the founders, and ultimately I actually brought in, just to tie back a couple steps here, one of my colleagues from Binance was Wei Zhu, and
right.
He was the CFO at Binance.
Yeah.
He's now the CEO at Coins PH, which is kind of a funny thing, right? So
right.
I was at Coins PH, and then I met him at Binance, and then we both ended up leaving, but he ended up going back and buying my other company, right? And so,
right.
You know, Wei and he has some colleagues that were also former colleagues of mine, Ling and Wayne, from, they have a fund called OFR, Old Fashioned Research. And I got them, you know, kind of told them about the opportunity for the Oniforce. It's the ability to kind of purchase and turn a project around. And so we formed a group together, along with, you know, a couple of the kind of project leads that were not the founders at Oniforce. And we formed this consortium and essentially we bought it. So, you know, our goal there is to take the IP, to help to build an expanded universe, rebuild the community, find partnerships. You know, like there's all these, you know, different successful profile pick companies now, like Yuga Labs, which has obviously the Bored Ape Yacht Club and all of the other parts of the other side meta too, right? So it's like Bored Ape Yacht right. Club, Mutants, Kennel Club. They've also acquired, you know, the CryptoPunks. There's the Azuki now is another kind of PFP company, and so there's this whole category of people that have made very successful high end Web3 IP, right? Another maybe really important example to point to is we're actually not the first of the kind of turnaround trend. There was another very beloved project that was down on its luck called Pudgy Penguins, and there was this very
there
was this very well known e-commerce entrepreneur named Luca Netz who came in and acquired Pudgy Penguins. And, you know, he's been really at it for over a year now. And now he's launching like plushies. So he's launching toys of penguins. Yep. He's launching all these opportunities for Pudgy Penguin IP holders to, you know, capture value in their IP. Right. And so for us, you know, I think we see the Oniforce as another one of these premier fallen blue chip IP companies, and that we're very excited at the prospect of turning it around and creating value for the brand and the IP. And you know, I think there is brands in kind of these Web3 media or IP plays. And so it was just a unique opportunity that I helped to connect everyone. And I think we've got a lot of exciting stuff planned for the Oniforce. So I don't like to shill too hard, but it's definitely something exciting we're working on.
Very cool. Very exciting. Speaking of, we just talked about how you helped scale companies at different stages, you know, Coins, you grew that. Binance, you helped expand it, but turning a project around, that's quite a different challenge, right? So what are your plans to grow, revive, and turn it around?
Yeah, well, you know, I think the fortunate thing is the project leader actually had a lot of good ideas already, right? He was someone that was brought in. He was not part of the original founding team, but I think the founders, the former founders of Oniforce maybe weren't ready to jump on some of these ideas. Maybe they weren't as aggressive in their approach. And so, you know, one of the things is it's not like we have a lack of ideas. It's actually a matter of unlocking Star-Lord. He's a very creative guy. He's got a background being an executive in the comic book space. So it's a lot of it was already kind of set up. We just needed to get to empower the right people, right? And so I think some of the stuff we've discussed already is we've brought in some people from the creative game space and comics book space as well. You know, I think we're one of the first projects that's been deeply embedded in the Comic-Con scene. And so we're going to be launching graphic novel for the Oni Force. We're going to be creating an expanded world. We have a handful of other things. I don't want to leak too much alpha of the podcast, but you know, for us, it's a matter of building, of really just world building, right? And so getting people excited about the Oni Force again. And, you know, I think that's a huge value. Yeah.
All right. That is so exciting. Looking forward to looking for something I could get at the floor if possible. Let's take it back to YGG. Of course, you're the CEO right now. You know, it's one of the most known companies in the country. And then I saw recently that you had a rebrand, and you actually have, you know, operations in many other countries and not just in the Philippines. So what's happening with YGG and what's next for you guys?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So the Oni Force stuff for me is, it's obviously something I'm passionate about, but actually something that's kind of happening on the side. So we helped to set up a team there, and that team is operating, and I'm not day to day with that team. Where I am day to day is YGG. And so the way YGG got famous initially was, in the Philippines, I'm sure many of the audience will know, 2020 and 2021, there was this beautiful period that we call Axie Summer. And, you know, it was play to earn gaming. It was, you know, you could invest, purchase an Axie and, you know, try to grind in the game to make money, or maybe find a scholar, who's someone that would borrow your asset, you know, play it and then share the earnings with you. Right. And so one of the ways YGG got to scale was, you know, really aggregating and breeding axes and then, you know, deploying scholarship operations, through the Philippines was really the largest market. And honestly, it's the area that the Philippines has become most known for globally in the crypto space, right? Was as a play to earn, as a sort of a bastion of adoption during the play to earn era. And so, I think YGG came to prominence kind of from that era, which was, you know, scaling scholarships. And, you know, we raised capital, we've made investments. And I think, so through Crypto Winter, though, you know, a lot of the dynamics of the market have changed in terms of scholarships. And so one of the things we've really focused on was being not just the scholarship guild. We've really built out our product team, and we're going to be building products and experiences. We're building right now products and experiences for Web3 gaming, right? Our mission is, we are, you know, what is a guild, right? A guild is both a group, you know, in the modern sense, a guild is a group of friends who play games together. But in a sort of old or ancient sense, a guild is a group of people that work in the same profession or a group of tradespeople, right? And so for us, we see ourselves as like a group of metaverse tradespeople, right? And so our goal is to get people on board into Web3 games, but then actually also into other kind of Web3 experiences, right? And so we've got, you know, a product team building that out. And one of the things we've done is, instead of just a single YGG core, we've started to split into groups, right? And invest in YGG groups globally, right? So we have YGG PH led by, you know, very famously led by Luis Buenaventura, who's got Metaversity and you know, we've got we've got a Web3 festival, you know, towards the end of the year, right? We've got events, we've got learnings, we've got kind of, you know, historically we've had kind of Web3 gaming assets, but now we've also got groups, similar groups, guild partners around the world who are kind of representing the YGG mission in other countries where it's relevant. Countries like, you know, areas like Latin America, India, other parts of Southeast Asia, Turkey, we've got Japan now. And so we have, you know, really this impressive network now of countries that hope to onboard people into Web3 gaming, right? And so that's kind of the guild network thing. And so one of the things we did as part of the rebrand was, we weren't just the sword and shield. We needed a design system that other groups within YGG could identify themselves in a kind of a coherent visual language. So we invented these things called runes. And the runes represent different groups or guilds at YGG. And ultimately, that's going to be something we, many of our community members are already playing with that. So they're designing their own runes. And ultimately, that's going to be a system that we share with anyone who wants to form a Web3 group, right? And so we'll be able to, you know, that's something we're working on right now is you know, using the rune system to, you know, kind of be part of the YGG brand or part of the YGG experience. Yeah.
Awesome. Wow. A lot in store for YGG. Yeah. Definitely super exciting to have you here. We're getting into the tail end of the show. And I learned a lot, man. I definitely from all your experience, there's so much more. You know, I'm sure 30 minutes is not enough. So I hope you can drop by again next time. I'm sure there's going
to
be more. For now, where can they find you? And where can they, I think you have a Substack or you're like a blog, or where can they find more of these thoughts of yours?
Sure. I'm easiest to find on Twitter. So just at Galtra. So on Twitter and LinkedIn, I'm at Galtra. And then I also do have a blog that I've been posting in a little bit more recently called Speculations. It's like speculations.substack.com. But just go to Galtra on Twitter, Galtra. And that's a good jumping off point. And then, I'm super excited to be here. You know, I think on the speculations side, I posted a talk that I did back in November, right, which was the history of crypto PH and kind of the scene in the Philippines. And so, you know, if you're interested in learning kind of what it was like in the early days of crypto in the Philippines before there was this huge universe of projects, I do try to address that in that talk. And so, you know, that might be a good place to start if you're passionate about this podcast and you know, the community that Harry and I are participating in here.
All right. Thank you so much, Colin. All those links that he mentioned, you can find in the description section. Please do check them out. You will learn a lot. If, you know, if this wasn't enough, there's so much more content in his Twitter, in his LinkedIn, and his blog. Thank you again, Colin. I'll see you around and see you in the next episode.
Thanks so much. Thanks, Harry.
That concludes another episode. Hope it was as insightful for you as it was for me. We have lots of exciting guests and topics coming up, so be sure to follow me on Twitter at Harry Initiative. Be updated on the next episodes and see you on our next trip here on Block to the Future.